You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
Really, I think, you know, with all the changes in technology, I think it still has to come back to the ability for us to enable humans to do more things.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Membership at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. And I'm really excited today to be chatting with Tom Henriksen. Tom, in addition to being a DOI ambassador, is a community builder and is the founder of both the DevOps and Agile Online Summits. When he's not creating and fostering communities, Tom is a software developer as well as an Agile and DevOps coach. Tom, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate the introduction. Always good to be here.
I tell people I'm going to, if you would like, as a side project, I can follow you around and give the introduction if you want whenever you meet people.
That would be interesting. I'm sure my family would love that.
So, Tom, are you ready to get human today?
You bet. You bet, Jason.
Awesome. So, I know you were on our Skillup Day circuit a few Skillup days ago, and you gave a talk, Humans Are Hard, Code Is Easy, which was a very popular talk, and I know you've given this before. So, tell me a little bit about the talk and the talk behind the talk. You know, maybe a little bit of backstory as to, you know, how you put that together and why you felt it was important to go out on the speaker circuit and spread this this message.
Yeah, that is a good question, Jason. I guess a lot of it starts with just, you know, being in the space, the IT space, being a developer and kind of working through the trials and tribulations of coming up through the ranks and doing various things. And as I talk about in the speech, you know, there's various points where, you know, things went well. And of course, Jason, there's also a lot of things where things didn't go so well. So that's where a lot of this comes from. But the title, Humans Are Hard, Code Is Easy. It's funny, as I give this talk in various venues, people outside of IT kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Or that's something a lot of the people I work with in IT need to hear. And it's one of those things where, you know, I go through, making some mistakes, being a developer, being, in a couple different roles really in technology, even into the speech where I talk a little bit about where being into a manager and some of the issues there, but how important those, you know, I think a lot of us in the technology area I see really want to focus on, and I've been guilty of this myself. I want to learn a new technology. I want to learn something new, you know, some new technology, but we forget sometimes about those other skills that are so important. And then we wonder why, oh, my career, it's kind of stagnating. Things aren't going the way I want. And so that's kind of the impetus of why I put this together.
And I feel like, and there is a point in your chat where you mention about how frustrating it can be on the IT side when speaking to someone who maybe isn't on the IT side, or perhaps different segments of the tech world. And really, you do speak different languages, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you need an interpreter at times to say what you want.
Yes. Yes, that is true. That is true. You remind me, Jason, I mentioned I've given the speech a few places. So I gave it recently to a security conference, and we were talking, we kind of chatted after the talk. We had kind of a Q&A session, and just even like, you know, you think about within the space of IT, kind of, as you mentioned, we kind of have to translate because, you know, say I'm a developer and somebody's in security, they're talking, they're looking at different things. Same thing, you know, like, for instance, like I've given this talk to some quality assurance group. And it can be somewhat of a similar thing where, you know, they're looking for things in a different manner. And that's, I guess, that's one of the things I try to share in the speech. And I think has been helpful for me is, for instance, like I go back to a story. I don't actually don't share this in the speech, but there was a QA person that I worked with. Her name was Mickey. And I remember one time she sat me down. She's like, Tom, come sit next to me. I want to show you something because she kind of walked me through how they would look at it. And I think it's, you know, as whatever our role is, whether we're a DevOps engineer or we're an SRE or we're a developer, we need to kind of sometimes think about what are the other person's vantage point? How are they looking at it? Like you mentioned, Jason, sometimes people with the business, you know, what are they, you know, how are they kind of attacking a challenge? Because I think, you know, for instance, one time in my career, I was trying to persuade somebody about something. And I was thinking, you know, oh, this is just really neat technology. We got to do this. And this person, all they cared about was dollars and cents. And it's like, okay, I got to think or look at it from their vantage point. For them, it's like, I don't want to pay for this technology. I don't even know if this is going to help us.
Yeah, that's funny because I think at the end of the day, right, we all speak different language. However, it's really what is the intent, right? Mm-hmm. It's finding out the intent. And I think sometimes, depending on which side you're on, IT or outside of IT or depending on your specific segment of IT, it's I see the end of the project.
Yeah.
But I don't understand all the steps to get there. And I think that maybe that's where the communication breaks down. And then it is that intent, right? At the end of the day, if it's dollars, that's the intent. If it's XYZ at the end of the project.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of have to think about it from their perspective. What are they looking like? You mentioned, is it dollars? Or maybe you're talking to somebody from a customer experience, you know, angle that they want to say, okay, we want this experience to be easier because I don't know about you, Jason, but a few times in my career, they wanted me to mock something up and it was the ugliest thing ever. But as a developer, you know, usually I don't have those UX chops. For instance, I remember there was a guy named Tom Bonney that I worked with. It was a great UX person and he would design things. I remember working with him like, oh, this is great. And he would even teach me a little bit about, okay, these are some principles. Because I think that's some of the things too. If we are curious and try to understand what perspective they're looking at it, that can help us, you know, kind of see their vantage point.
Yeah. So thanks for walking me through that. I like to kind of, in the past two podcasts, I've actually been working backwards. And we kind of start at the where you're at currently and work your way back. But I'm curious to learn more about how you got started in the field. What interested you in DevOps? And then even before that, what was your interest in tech? How'd you get interested in tech?
Yeah. And I kind of go into this a little bit in the speech, but my career journey is kind of a interesting one. I started out kind of I'll tell more about this later, but a different career path. It wasn't IT, but I kind of struck out in that career path. And then a friend of mine in high school had reached out and said, oh, there's a lot of opportunity in tech. The odd thing about this, though, when I went to college, I didn't study any technology originally. But as a kid, I think I was in eighth grade. I had this math teacher. And I wasn't the greatest math student, but he knew I had a computer at home. He's like, Tom, if you put some of these problems in, you know, and you make a basically write a computer program for these problems, I'll give you extra credit. And he started doing that. And that was something I was like, oh, this is easy. I figured it out. So I'm dating myself, but my mom bought us an Atari, I think it was a 400 computer way back when. So that's one of the, you know, that was one of the things that kind of started me. So I had a detour there where I was probably kind of going down a technical path, but then in college, I think my original degree was in management. So it wasn't even tech related. So, but that's kind of where I went in a detour and got into tech. And then it started as a developer many years ago, actually started out with working on C programs and C++ and a whole bunch of old stuff like that.
And what took you off the path to go towards management? What made you detour?
You know, to be honest, when I first got into, there was an opportunity to work at a different company as a manager, but still as a developer. So that's one thing. I've never been like a full on manager. I've always been a manager, like for instance, that had to do development too. I tell the story. This is something a lot of times in the agile space, people talk about like the scrum master role should be your only role. Well, I was actually a scrum master, a manager, and a developer all on the same project, wearing three hats. And it was pretty crazy. But I learned a lot, and of course made some big mistakes doing that as well. So, but yeah, that was kind of the original, just kind of, it was an option. And I kind of wanted to, you know, see what that was like. So
how did you find your way back to tech? What was your first, job in tech, and, did it shape where you are today, or was it, was it another detour?
You know, my first job in tech, like I said a little bit earlier, I was way back. It was before, well, right around the year 2000, I think I got into this. But there was I was working for a small, I suppose, medium-sized company in the Midwest, and we were doing conversions for Y2K stuff. They had there was a customer that had it was an old Unix machine that they wanted to convert. It was basically this company that sold metal to fabricators. And I remember, this is the funny thing. It was, they wanted it. If you're familiar with ISAM files and VSAM, they're basically these flat files before we had relational databases. So the system, even at that time, was really old, but this customer was notoriously cheap. They wanted to add a fax number and an email address into these VSAM files. We had to recompile all these. And it's something I still, to this day, I'm like, wow, that is just like a technology that is good. It's in the past. I'll just say that.
Y2K, nothing happened.
Exactly.
There was nothing. The biggest, biggest nothing, which I guess is good.
Yeah, nothing happened, but a lot of companies spend a lot of money.
So much money.
Trying to get ready for it. Yeah, it's just it was crazy. I remember. So the company I worked with at the time, they were a big Oracle provider, and they were trying to move everybody to Oracle databases. And it was interesting to watch these companies spend all this money, and like you said, nothing happened.
So that's where you got your start. And I'm sure. So today, I mean, with what you do, does that managing? I wonder if that managing background has come into play. Like you said, you were the manager on one of your project or on a lot of your projects.
Yeah.
And DevOps is such a blended space.
It is. Yeah. That's the thing with being kind of having a little experience there. It helps, like you mentioned before, doing the community building I do, I think helps in that regard. Just trying to, work with people and influence people. It's funny. I remember there was a guy, he was talking about management, that we should treat all of our employees like they're volunteers, you're running the Red Cross or whatever, some volunteer organization, because, at the end of the day, people can leave, Jason, if you, you and your manager don't get along, you're going to look for something else. So, you have to treat people with respect, kind of give them some autonomy. I always think back to Daniel Pink's book, Drive, and that AMP, autonomy, mastery, and purpose, giving people that. I think that's where people can really excel. And I think for me, when I work at organizations, those are things I look for too.
Yeah, that's great. I do too. I think it's interesting right now. We've never been in a world where employees had so much say, and it's been really interesting. And I'm sure, in the DevOps space too, I mean, with all the principles, I feel like they've never been more valued than they are right now or should be valued.
So true, Jason. So true.
So as you were coming up, did you have a mentor in the space that helped you or several?
Yes. Yeah, that's actually in the first part of the speech, I talk about a couple of my mentors. For instance, there was this DBA, Doyle, who taught me a lot. But as I say in the speech, didn't say much. So I kind of had to infer and learn from, try to figure out what he would do. Because seriously, he would come to my desk, he would fix something and he would be gone. And I'd be like, okay, I'd have to kind of backtrack and see, okay, what did he do there? There was a couple other people that I've had that along the way have been really good mentors, a few developers, few managers that have really been helpful to kind of get me to understand kind of what to value. And I think this is something too that I talk about a little bit in the speech. So there was a point in my career where I got fired. I got let go. And I talk about that in the full length of the speech. I think on the Skill Up Days talk, I'm not sure if I got into that part, but that was something one thing I learned getting let go is the importance of clarity. So one thing I try to strive anytime I'm talking to someone now, with work or with anything, try to understand, because like you were talking earlier, Jason, you know, sometimes it seems like we're speaking different languages and we need to ask, kind of step back, ask questions and make sure, okay, is this what Jason wants? Or Tom, are you sure that, you know, just so we're all kind of on the same page, because, you know, that was kind of the failing that I had, especially when I got let go, is I thought I needed to focus on X when in fact the company wanted me to focus on Y. And, you know, that was the issue. So that was kind of an important and good learning for me.
Yeah, that's great. I was about to ask, was there advice that you wish you had? But I feel like you just told me the answer to that question.
Yeah.
Were there any other challenges, major challenges that you had to overcome in that earlier part of your career?
Yeah, I think really, as I, you know, and I talk about this a little bit, and it's kind of the main topic is these soft skills. Early in my career, to be honest, Jason, I was focusing on, okay, what skill can I learn? So I was one of these people that would go out and like, okay, I'd get a book on, like, for instance, I was originally a Java developer, and then I tried to get Java certifications, and then I tried to, I worked for an Oracle provider, as I mentioned earlier, I tried to get some Oracle certifications. And that was one of the things where I saw, oh, I'm doing all this work, but it's not, I'm not, my career isn't progressing like I want it to. And then that's when I started to realize, okay, I need to work on, kind of have a balance to my personal development, that I can learn some tech stuff, but I also need to have some of these soft skills and work on them, especially like communication is one I've tried to work on, obviously being a speaker, but like originally got into Toastmasters many years ago. That was helpful just to kind of get through the ums and the ahs that a lot of people will stumble upon when they first try to give a speech. So that was kind of a good track to go on to keep a balance.
So many notes. I got so many notes when I joined Toastmasters, and I'm still not great at it. Mm-hmm. It's tough.
It's a good learning.
It's really tough. It's great. Mm-hmm. Yep. see, there you go. Every time I go to ask a question, but they say you take a beat, right? You're supposed to take a beat before you speak, because the is a filler for the empty space, which I do all the time. And no matter how much I participate in Toastmasters, I can't shake it. So if you know the trick, please let me know.
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. The choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
So were there any other interesting stories, I guess, along the way that maybe were in the talk, but you didn't get to say the whole story that you could share with us?
Sure. I think one of the big things, and I go into this a little bit, but is the importance of relationships. So I talk about this a little bit in the speech. There was he was a VP of IT at a company that I worked with. His name was John, and he was excellent with kind of teaching me how important relationships were. I did some work with his team, and we kind of put together kind of a training program for them, really. But he was really helped me understand that importance of relationships through your career, and that, you know, for instance, if maybe you leave a company or go to some different part of the company, it's important to keep those relationships. And that's one of the things. For instance, I told you earlier about the story about me getting let go in the speech, and I also cover this as well. But when I got let go, I realized how important that network was. And I had actually built a pretty decent network that I was able to have multiple job options once I got let go, because I had, you know, previously to that, you know, I worked at a couple different companies and had a pretty good reputation. So people were reaching out to me, you know, to say, oh, you know, can you help, you know, we've got a spot for you here. And that was one of the things that, you know, anytime you leave, it's important to not, you know, burn bridges and think about ways to, you know, keep those relationships open.
I preach that concept all the time and tell everyone I know, because networking is so important, just to not just your career and career growth. I think it makes us all better at what we do, because you learn from each other. But then, and don't quote me on this percentage, but it was told to me earlier this year, but something like close to 80% of jobs are filled by people who have made it, through their connections, through their
I've heard that too.
Network, which is crazy because it almost seems like, well, why are we posting jobs in the first place?
Yes.
Seems like that's a waste of time, but it really is about who you know. And, and it makes sense because you hire people you trust and if you know them.
Yep. Or even along the lines of maybe I don't know you, Jason, but somebody, you know, we mutually know refers you to, vouches for Jason's a good guy. You got to bring him in, at least give him an interview. You know, if you have a good friend that says that, of course you're going to bring him in. So yeah, that's important.
Yeah. Not to be an advertiser for LinkedIn, but I mean, LinkedIn makes it so much easier than it used to be because now you don't even have to go anywhere. You used to have to go to like the, you know, the local meetings. I mean, and meet people at Toastmasters, for example,
or
a DevOps Institute chapter meeting, exactly. which I think is still, I will always go back to live meetings, especially when they come back. I can't wait for it.
Yes.
I think there is no better networking than the kind that you could do with a handshake. Although I'm a germaphobe, for anyone who's listened to the podcast before already knows. So this was already a thing for me, no handshakes, but really, you know, being able to put a face and have a conversation.
Yeah, that's important. It reminds me. So a friend of mine back in the Midwest, he wrote a book called Networking: Ties That Bind, and he kind of walks through how his career was basically built because of the connections he made. And I think, you know, that's so important to, like you mentioned, going to little chapter meetings. I know, for instance, I'm involved with a few groups locally that in the DevOps space and the Agile space that I connect with people there. And it's so important. Those are, you know, for instance, like I have larger things like the DevOps Online Summit that has people from all over the world, but still, you know, being in a group in your local area is so important to connect.
It's the blend of everything. And especially now that we're in a digital world, I mean, we've all been doing it for the past 18 months, you know, digitally.
Yeah, we're getting better.
Yeah. So now we're much better than we used to be. That used to be like an online chapter. I don't understand that. So take me to founding the DevOps and Agile Online Summits and the, what do you find so important with community building that made you want to set up both of those?
Yeah. You know, it comes back to one thing I think that I've always tried to be really curious about things that I'm learning. So for instance, I originally got into kind of this agile space quite a few years ago when I mentioned, I think I was a manager, a scrum master and a developer on the same project. That was, boy, that's probably, boy, I think that's more than 10 years ago. So I got into that space, but I've always been curious about Agile and then into DevOps. I've actually done some DevOps work and then got, so basically it's that curiosity that I was like, you know, for instance, like I couldn't go to some of these conferences, but I'm like, you know, I could interview a couple people and ask some questions. And I found that people kind of like to be like sitting over my shoulder and kind of tuning in, kind of like the people today that are going to listen into our conversation, Jason, be like, oh, what are they, you know, what can they learn? And that's one of the things. Along with that, the people in the DevOps and the Agile space are very overall, I would say like 80% willing to give, have a conversation, reach out to them. They're more than happy to, especially, you know, as this is with the DevOps Institute. The people there are great. I'm an ambassador. I work with a lot of ambassadors. They're a great group of people that want to share their knowledge and just kind of really, it's kind of along with the networking, but also to kind of like, hey, you know, I made this mistake. Don't you make the same mistake and kind of share the knowledge. So that's one of those great things.
I think that's the best way to learn. That's how I learn. And I didn't understand it early on, but I would rather attend something that says, here are the 10 things I did wrong. So you don't have to get, I mean, I would go to that 10 times over than something else. So yeah. And I think Your comments on DevOps Institute are right on. Not to toot our own horn. But I think that's great that you feel that way. And I'm relatively new to the community. And I've been working with communities for 16 years. And I think this one is really fantastic. The ability to put competitiveness aside and being able to help one another to grow an industry. You don't get that in all industries. You really don't.
True. That's true. Yeah, I would agree.
All right. So we've kind of established where you were, how you've gotten to where you are, and the soft skills, which I find to be, you know, if not more, I think those are just as important, right, as everything else. What over the past 2 or 18 months have you taken from this pandemic that you could apply to the talk and apply to kind of what's going on?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is, you know, I think we've learned, obviously all of us have learned how resilient we are. The human race is very resilient. And I think it's one of those things where part of it, I think an important thing is in that resilience is we need to focus on what's good and what's working, as opposed to, you know, all the things. Because I think there's a lot of things that we could focus on and say, oh, you know, like you were talking earlier, Jason, about, you know, we haven't been able to go to in-person events. That's a given, but hopefully, as you mentioned, it'll come back. But, you know, think about some of the things that we've been able to do. For instance, like doing some of this online stuff, I've connected with a lot of people that I might not have connected with because of this. So, I'm not trying to gloss over that people have been, you know, lives have been changed because of this. So it's a serious thing, but I think we need to think about all the things we've learned. All of us, I think, have learned how to become remote employees, whether we want to or not, because which is interesting. I'm sure, Jason, you probably see this too, is organizations are trying to figure out what's next for us. Are we going to, you know, do we want to have everybody come back to the way they were, or do people want to come back to the way, you know, I know from different people I've talked to, you know, organizations are kind of wrestling with that to see what does that new world look like. And so it's been a as I talked about before, I've tried to be curious and understand there's a lot to learn here. And I'm sure there's going to be more as we go through it.
I think resiliency is a great word. And the ability to pivot yes. was like the key word back in like April. Yeah. I mean, I remember the talks because remote work was starting to become more popular for yeah. sure, as opposed to the previous decade. But I think it was really starting to pick up. And then all of a sudden everyone had to.
Yep.
And it's amazing when you have no choice and how quick companies adapted.
Yeah. 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 It reminds me of the book that Lizette Sutherland put together. I think it's Work Remotely from Anywhere or whatever. She does collaboration superpowers. And she was on this thing before, way before all this happened. And I just remember, I think I saw something or I talked to her a little bit kind of in the midst of when it was just starting the pandemic. And she was just like, you know, going crazy, trying to help organizations, you know, do that. But like another thing in the DevOps space is a company called GitLab, which is a completely remote company, you know, which is an interesting thing. That's the one thing I always think of. How many companies are going to do that model? You know, some I'm sure will be hybrid. Some will, you know, some will probably try to go back to office centric, which is another term a lot of people I don't think had ever thought about, but like office centric work and kind of that, I've heard people talk about that. That's kind of an interesting concept to say, okay, do we need to be office centric for certain things? You know, I think a lot of companies are going to find out ways to change.
I think it's imagine the students coming out of college right now, and yes. this is the world they're walking into, and they have no yep. idea perhaps what it was like to work in a real office.
I know.
It's going to be interesting. Crazy concept. Mm-hmm. And especially because I don't know, like you said, I don't know if we are going to be going back to how it yeah. was. You know, yep. I think hybrid seems to be, every time I see those LinkedIn surveys, which are yeah. absolutely not official, but it seems like more yes. people tend to yeah. say hybrid than anything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah.
So what are you most excited about for the future of DevOps right now?
Really, I think, you know, with all the changes in technology, I think it still has to come back to the ability for us to enable humans to do more things. I look as a developer, I know I was listening to somebody kind of talk about, for instance, Jonathan Johnson is a guy that I've worked with a little bit. He's a Kubernetes expert. He was kind of talking through, you know, when you think about Kubernetes and how it's abstracting all these things away. But it's, and I was listening to somebody else talk about too, about the complexity. You know, we deal with a lot of complexity, especially us in the DevOps space. We try to have all these abstractions. And, you know, I think I think there's going to be a lot of change where we're going to have to reset and make some things simplistic enough where people can essentially conceptualize, easy for me to say, it, a big concept. Because, for instance, like Kubernetes does a lot of things, but if you don't understand all the parts of that, you know, that's a problem. Another thing, too, along with that, as Jonathan brought this up, and I think this is an important thing. As a technology person myself, sometimes we look like, for instance, I just learned Kubernetes. I have to apply this. You know, the technology has to be right for the, you know, your organization. And I've done that myself where, like, for instance, early in my career, I went to a conference and I remember coming back on a Monday thinking, how do I get my boss talked into all these new technologies? Not even thinking, does this make sense for our organization? Which, of course, most of it didn't. So it's, you know, you need to kind of think about it from that mindset. So I think that's kind of an important thing to hopefully we can bring that back in the technology area to bring that focus.
Great. I appreciate it. So let's go back. Now we'll go to personal, ask some personal questions. Because sure. I feel like we've got a good sense now of who you are, and that's what this mm-hmm. podcast is all about. So what's one unique thing about you that maybe you haven't shared with colleagues before?
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I find that is, I think, surprising for a lot of people is I started in sales. And I alluded to this a little bit earlier, but is as a technology person, a lot of times we're like, oh, sales, that's disgusting. And it's funny, as I've gone through my career, I kind of felt that way initially when I got into technology. Like, I don't want to be anywhere near sales or anything. And not that I, you know, I guess one of the things I think when we think about it, as I've gone through my career, like you get into management, or even if you become a senior, you know, say you're a senior DevOps engineer at your team, people look up to you, and you need to, essentially, you need to influence. And that's one of the key things I talk about in my speech is influence, which is really sales. Like if you want, for instance, like I was just talking about Kubernetes, maybe there's some technology you want to influence your team to use. You need to be able to influence them, but not, you know, it's not like kind of berate them to do it. You know, you have to think about ways to connect with people and build that human connection. And then, you know, get them to see the merits of what you're trying to say, as opposed to, I think sometimes people think, oh, if you're, you know, say you're a manager or you're a senior, you're a team lead, you know, people just have to do what you say. Well, no, they don't. And people, as you mentioned before, I think the workforce is changing and people want to have more input. So I think that's one of the things where we have to have more conversations and build those relationships. And then that's one way we can kind of influence, but we have to be, you know, be willing to have that give and take.
Validation mm-hmm. is crucial to that process, I think.
Yes. And yes.
Understanding the problem first, right? That's classic sales. Mm-hmm. Sell the mess, not the vacuum. You know, what's the problem? Here's the solution. And mm-hmm. this is why the solution is going to help you, because I understand that this is a problem.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, what have you been doing over these 18 months other than giving talks and working? What do you do to escape? Because I think we all need our escape. If you listen to the podcast, mine is music. What is your go-to?
You know, really, it's just to get outside, go for a walk, try to get fresh air. Occasionally, I do some biking, but it just enjoy. I've done a little hiking, too, over the pandemic. But just try to, every day, I try to have some time to get outside, get some fresh air, even if it's really hot. You know, it's summer here where I live here in the Northeast, or in the winter, I still try to get out, you know, and get out and get some fresh air. Cause I think that's one of the things that really helps me get away from the technology and get some fresh air to kind of help reset. Because I think sometimes, you know, when we're working on a technology issue, sometimes we can think, boy, this is the worst thing ever. You know, we can kind of get in our heads. It's like, get away from it a little bit, kind of think about it. You're like, oh, okay. Kind of gives you a better perspective and helps you kind of center what you're working on.
Definitely. I think that's what we all need is that reset so that we're able mm-hmm. to get back to it. Cause sometimes it can be hard, especially if you've never worked from home before. It could be different. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. yeah. Well, Tom, thank you so much for being on the podcast today, sharing with us and giving us a little bit of personal too, and walking us through why, you know, humans are hard, but coding is easy.
You bet, Jason. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this the same way that I always do, encouraging you to become a premium member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.